I'm a shark. 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you. What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil?
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
You try to push me over the edge. Thought that I was helpless. But I'm stronger than that. I'll never look back. Moonlight, evening conversations.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Big show tonight. Lots of news to go over. Tons of stuff that needs to be discussed and needs to be disseminated across many different borders and many different places from across the hockey world. I got a special guest with us tonight. This is Jason Pajak joins us. Jason, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks. Glad to have you with us tonight, Jason, because Jenna's taking a bit of a personal day, which I totally authorize and understand. Mm-hmm. And Jenna will be back hopefully next week, but got you here tonight, Jason. So let's get into this because we got some digging to do on a bunch of different news. I guess the biggest news out of the NHL this week, though, Turner Sports is going to be taking over the broadcasting spot that NBC once had. Turner Sports jumping in with both feet for a 7-year rights agreement that begins in 2021-2022. They will basically show the Winter Classic, 3 Stanley Cup Final Series, and they'll have up to 72 regular season games and half the first 3 Stanley Cup playoff rounds each season on their networks and streaming options. The deal's worth about $225 million annually.
That's a nice chunk of change.
So along with ESPN and Sportsnet now, the NHL has gone out and basically increased their overall value for television rights by a lot. They're basically looking at about $1 billion annually now, $1 billion US annually for those TV rights, which is always obviously huge when it comes to what the NHL can do. But we're also talking about an NHL, though, that has said they will continue to sell helmet ads. They will continue to put virtual ads on the boards. They will begin to explore the idea of putting ads on jerseys. Have we reached peak NHL money absorption here? Because I don't know why you would need to do any of those things if you have $1 billion coming in annually.
That's the thing, is billionaires are never satisfied. And I don't think there is a limit to where the NHL is willing to go. I think it's going to be that slow creep over the course of the year. Like, we're not going to see I immediately think of the massive Chevrolet logo on the chest of every Manchester United player. We're not going to get to that point anytime soon. But I can tell you, if someone like Jeremy Jacobs had the option, he would take it instantaneously. Wow, for the amount of money that Premier League teams make, mid-tier teams, like the tier 3 English teams, make off sponsorships like that. That's stuff that they're looking for or that they would love to have.
So, I mean, I guess the big thing that is guaranteed with both the ESPN and the Turner Sports deals is the fact that streaming will be a large component of how the NHL is delivered to fans now, in that ESPN Plus, which is part of the whole Disney Plus sort of background there, and HBO Max, which is the streaming service for Turner, will be used to basically air a ton of content and in some cases games for the NHL. Looking at Jeff Zucker's comment, Jeff Zucker, who is the chairman of Warner Media News and Sports, said, quote, "We have the ability to put games there, but the initial focus will be on Turner networks. As the consumers continue to skate where the puck is, we will be there. But it's not imminent, and it's not going to happen this year." It sounds like Turner is basically getting the NBC part of this deal, whereas ESPN is doing more of the streaming. And then they're going to sort of reevaluate as they go through this deal with the NHL, which I think is good. But I also think it's not good because now we're talking about the only place you can get hockey in the US is through your cable package. If you don't have cable TV, you can't get it.
Yeah, that's a big issue because we've seen ESPN shrinking over the last few years, you know, even with, you know, the acquisition by Disney and all of the money that injects into it. You know, they've laid off a lot of really talented talent, for lack of a better term. And the fact that they're pushing the streaming, I think it's, you know, they're recognizing or they're really feeling the squeeze that people cutting the cable on their cable providers has had for especially their network. You know, we don't have that issue here in Canada really, because, you know, if you have a TV package, it's going to have TSN or Rogers on it.
Right. But in some cases, yes. In other cases, no. There are people that don't get Sportsnet in Canada.
Yeah.
Based on their cable package as well. So it's kind of the same idea. Although, again, you do get CBC, so I mean, that's all the basic cable package. Right, you will get at least hockey once a night, whereas this won't happen at all in the States anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got like a weird situation where I think you've got, because Turner, for people that don't know, Turner Sports, they have rights, broadcasting rights for the NBA, MLB, NCAA. So they've got a stacked slate. Like the one league they don't have is the NFL.
They have Major League Baseball on TBS. They have the NBA and All Elite Wrestling on TNT. They also have a portion of the NCAA men's basketball tournament that they air on both TNT and TBS. And there has been no decision on which day the NHL would air on Turner Sports Networks yet. So we're talking about competing with other major leagues now on Turner Sports. And you just wonder that with the success that they've had on some of those nights anyway, has had on TNT and on TBS, are we going to see the NHL sort of push to the side and go, well, you can take Thursday nights because where nobody else is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like they're going to throw them on one night where they're going to have to compete with the NFL and they know that they're not going to get the eyes that they normally would. So like that's kind of a huge worry. There's one nice point that I think might've caught the NHL's eye is that Turner Sports has a partnership with DraftKings where DraftKings is the exclusive provider of daily fantasy and sports betting information on Turner Sports and Bleacher Report.
Yeah.
So that tie-in, which has been really big for different companies, might have caught the NHL's eye a little bit because they are still like they're finally lifting their feet on the whole gambling issue and moving towards being providers. You know, for the consequence of my job, I had to listen to the debates that were going on with Bill's C-218,
right? Yeah,
in the House of Commons, and when it was passed to the Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights. And average people might not know this, but the NHL actually testified during those committee meetings and talked about their strategy and their desire for single event sports betting and to expand sports betting in Canada because of the value proposition that it has. And they're making a huge, huge push to, you know, where before on an issue like this, they actually had their lawyers arguing against these types of bills.
Right.
Now they're jumping in with both feet. And I think having DraftKings be right there. And the one thing about the DraftKings deal with Turner Sports is that it excludes the NBA, who has a league-wide deal with FanDuel. So the NHL can slot in and take that DraftKings relationship and run with it.
I mean, the other thing that I thought was kind of unique, and I'm not saying that's not, because I think with having, obviously having a team in Vegas opens that entire door for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's a big chunk of that in terms of, you know, how Vegas makes their money. And certainly it's going to come back to Vegas in terms of people going down there and betting on sports and everything like that. But anyway, the other thing that I thought was interesting though, is that the NHL basically is dealing with an entity they already dealt with in terms of producing the 24/7 series, in that they had that on HBO. Mm-hmm. And you think if HBO can be included in that, you could get a lot more, I don't want to say R-rated, but certainly a lot more R-rated stuff on HBO. As we saw with 24/7, you can get basically unedited information onto HBO because it's a cable package that you have to pay a premium for that you can't get anywhere else. And I think that really opens up an interesting idea for the NHL if they're willing to go down that route.
Well, that's a door that is already, they've already got a foot in, because the Toronto Maple Leafs have that docuseries that they're doing with Amazon right now. And it's going to be airing during the summer, kind of that dead time where there's no hockey. And it's a point where, you know, I, through the last few weeks, have gotten incredibly into Formula One racing through the F1 Drive to Survive series on Netflix, which has been running for the past 3 years. So it started in the 2018 F1 season and went through 2020, and they're recording the 2021 season, so season 4 of the show now. And this is going to be a little bit inside baseball, but the Bahrain Grand Prix, which is one of the first Grand Prix of the F1 season, usually doesn't get tons and tons of press, and doesn't get a huge viewership. It's incredibly important for the teams because it's the first time they're going to be going man to man on an actual racetrack, so they can test their cars, and it's a real like measuring stick for them. But it doesn't usually get a lot of viewership. But this year, because so many people were watching Drive to Survive throughout quarantine, they saw the highest ratings for that Grand Prix they have ever had. And the big thing was a massive, massive, massive spike in the 18 to 35 year old female demographic. So the NHL is putting their foot in the door with this. And if they can actually suck it up and provide some quality entertainment, you know, hockey's exciting. Hockey's has the potential to be a big draw for people because it's something that not a lot of people, especially in the States, see. And it's something different. And they have a great chance to do something here.
Right. And I mean, I was going to say, much like, you know, Netflix is repackaging sort of that F1 series, I mean, the NHL could repackage itself very interestingly across the HBO network. And I just go, that's a huge opportunity right there, because how many other leagues, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, are going to HBO and saying, we'll give you all access, like unedited, all access. You can go crazy with it. And, you know, don't worry about the bleep and the swears. Don't worry about, you know, cutting out the, I mean, you know, there are things obviously they won't show on TV with that. But I mean, this is the thing, is that I think that this deal with Turner really opens up doors going forward that other places can't. And I'm sorry for NBC's loss. I mean, they were there for 16 years on NBC, but NBC basically came back and said, well, if you're going to cut the number of games that we're going to cut the offer that we're going to give you as well. And the NHL walked away from them.
Yeah.
So I don't blame NBC for being a little slighted, because the NHL basically sold off half their games to ESPN and then turned around and said, well, same money or else. And NBC went, but we're not getting the same service. So, I mean, this whole Turner Sports thing, I think, is going to be interesting. I do think that the idea of not having it on basic cable package anywhere is going to hurt the NHL at first, only because people will go looking for it and can't find it in the US. But I think that the money that they're going to make off this, they don't care. And that's what it comes down to. And I know that we talk about greedy NHL every week on this show, but it comes down to the fact that this is a shiny new toy. The NHL wanted it. The NHL got it. They'll play with it for as long as they have to, and then they'll go and find something else when they're done with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good because it's going to help the NHL restabilize after COVID. We might see the cap have maybe a year or so less of a flat cap.
Oh, no, this isn't hockey related revenue. That's the thing.
Oh, great.
So this is what the NHLPA will go to fight for. Is that they're going, you're making $1 billion off of the backs of us because you can put it on TV. Mm-hmm. We deserve a cut of that. And the NHL is going, but it's not hockey related revenue. This is a deal that we negotiated specifically for the NHL.
This is what happens when you have a league run by lawyers.
This is the CBA all over again. So be prepared that in whatever it is, 2026 or whatever the next one comes up, or 2027 or whatever it is, be prepared, because this is going to be a huge sticking point, especially if they've made $4 billion over the last 4 years before that CBA expires.
Don't worry. By that time, I'm going to be running around in a McLaren F1 jersey. And
there you go.
I'll be done.
Changing the entire focus of North American sports from hockey to F1. I like it. I like it.
Hey, we got some great racers.
Hey, I'm taking nothing away from it. I know, I was going to say, I saw the announcement today. Not that this is the F1 show on UMFM, but I saw they canceled the Canadian Grand Prix and they'll be back in 2022. That kind of sucks.
Yeah, it does. Because like Montreal's, it's a fantastic race and it's a beautiful racetrack. Like you're actually, it extends out into the water.
Right, yeah.
Which is a really cool thing. Like there are three races that I think are the most beautiful. Singapore, which is one of the only night races. The Monaco Grand Prix, obviously, because it's in Monaco and it's on the actual streets of the city, and Montreal, where actually you're going out and jetting off into the water. But, you know, obviously with Quebec being where it is, with COVID and everything, like, even though Montreal's not doing as bad, I think it's after what happened last year, I think a lot of leagues are like, okay, let's just, we can cut corners where it'll make sure we don't have an absolute disaster.
I mean, I just want to see it come back, obviously, in 2022. Obviously, I understand the reasons for it being canceled this year, but it's just one of those things where you kind of go, man, like, again, another Canadian institution sort of affected by this. But so, you know what? I mean, now they're going into COVID. Let's get into a little bit of COVID, because we'll go to Alberta, where the Alberta Junior Hockey League is once again dealing with COVID. The Whitecourt Wolverines and the Bonnyville Pontiacs have been shut down for 14 days. This is, again, after the AJHL begged, borrowed, and stole to get back on the ice at the beginning of April. These two teams, Whitecourt and Bonnyville, have been shut down for 14 days after Whitecourt had positive tests within their team, forcing Bonnyville as contact tracing to shut down for 14 days as well. With Alberta's numbers spiking, are we ever going to learn how to do this properly?
Not what we're finding out is, if you don't have the money and you don't have the ability to sequester people in a room, you're not going to get it done. Like, even with all the money in the world, the NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB were just racked by COVID. But the fact that they were able to continue wasn't just a factor of their protocols being fantastic. It was that they just continued on, because these are people whose entire life, their job, their career is to be on that playing surface.
Yeah.
And that's what they're paid for in this league. These leagues make billions of dollars. So they're able to pay for the travel and pay for the testing and pay for the treatments and everything under the sun. Whereas these junior leagues, you know, I remember doing a piece for the Manitoban years ago, talking about the revolving door that is junior A hockey ownership in Canada, and how teams just rise and fall and show up and disappear every single year.
Yeah.
Because we talk about the NHL teams being a plaything, like, owning a junior hockey team is just a money pit. And when you have a bunch of people who, these are high school students, these are people who are living with billet families or living with their own families, they're going to school, they're going out, and you don't have the ability to lock them down in a hotel room like the NHL does, this was never going to work.
So I, not to cut you off, I'm legitimately just going through the AJHL website now, because I only caught the news yesterday. But the Okotok Oilers and the Drumheller Dragons have also been shut down for 14 days as of April 23rd.
Exactly.
like every team is affected, and every team just seems to be rotating through these shutdowns. And I just go, why did you guys, I understand why you begged to come back. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get the fact that, you know, and I understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, the setup and how it works and, you know, how they're losing money and if they don't play and all this. But honestly, with the long-term effects we're seeing in athletes, why are we committing these athletes to possible long-term health implications?
I mean, like, even
that's the
even
part
then,
that I don't
get.
They've
got sponsors dollars that they have to worry about. They've got, you know, and it's the players. A lot of the times it's them pushing the fact that they need to make something.
Sure. But again, right? We're talking about Jason Tatum in the NBA now using a puffer to be able to before and after games in order for him to be able to play.
Because we're talking Marco Rossi, who just now is finally able to breathe again.
Who spoke about worrying about falling asleep and dying because he didn't know if he's going to breathe all night.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about the insanity now that's coming out of COVID, because now we're starting to see the long-term effects. And I don't understand why we're still so dead set on pushing these players into situations they don't have to go into. I get that hockey players want to play hockey. I understand that. I get that that's what they're programmed to do. I really do get that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you're dead, you can't play hockey.
That's the thing. If you're dead, you can't play hockey. I mean, I'm looking at it now. the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, teams played between 2 and 6 games before the season shut down.
Yeah.
In the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, Nipawin Weiwei got up to 10 games before the shutdown, but the Winnipeg Freeze played 5. So, you know, the fact that they tried and tried and tried, and I think they're still trying to move forward, is just bullheaded stupidity.
Wow.
We're like, when your big brothers in the CHL can't get a season done or can't get a full season done, like the OHL didn't play, the QMJHL's done, the WHL,
no, the Q's still playing, the Q's pushing forward playing? Their playoffs. Yeah.
All right. Well, that
the only teams that aren't playing are Halifax and Cape Breton, which we'll talk about in a second. The only two teams that aren't participating, and technically Charlottetown's not participating until later. And I'll tell you, and I'll explain that again, because we talked about it a little bit last week, but they're pushing forward with playoffs despite massive outbreaks in that province, across those provinces, excuse me, both New Brunswick and Quebec.
Yeah. And we had some WHL teams saying no this year, and now they're in bubbles trying to get their season done and get their playoffs done. Like, it's,
well, WHL finishes today, and they're going to finish up with that bubble. The only team that was affected by COVID in those bubbles, in the BC bubble anyway, was Kelowna.
Mm-hmm.
And they Kelowna's were affected,
had a lot of trouble with COVID.
Right. So they were affected hard. Every other team that was in the bubbles, though, specifically in the Saskatchewan bubble, there was no problems. The Alberta bubble had no problems. The BC, again, we had that problem with Kelowna. They only played like 5 or 6 games a season. And then the US bubble, which had the US teams, they played their own season and did their own thing. But they're not even having a playoff. Like, they're just going, mm-hmm. they're just saying, okay, we're good, we're done after that.
Yep. So, like, there's a certain point where health needs to trump everything else. I mean, we're seeing it here in Manitoba where the new health orders come down and you're not allowed to have people outside your household sit on your lawn masked up 20 feet away.
Right.
But you can go and sit next to those people in a restaurant because there's no household restriction on a patio where it's just,
I mean, the hypocrisy from the government, governments aside, in terms of the way that they're doing that. I'm glad you brought up, though, the government side of it, because Nova Scotia, where, again, they were supposed to have the IIHF Women's World Championship ongoing right now. That's where it was supposed to be played. Nova Scotia locked down hard this week. Cases continue to rise there. As of Tuesday, there were 96 new cases, bringing the record high in Nova Scotia to 419 cases total. They have locked down hard. You're only allowed household bubble contact. All schools are closed and all non-essential businesses closed, and all sports events have been canceled across the province. Mm-hmm. My question is, for the people that want to complain, I get that hockey players want to play. My question is that, and I know there was some outrage towards Nova Scotia when it came up, but would you rather play 2 or 3 games of a tournament and then have it canceled, like the U Sports National Championship was last year? Or would you rather just have it canceled at the beginning and just start fresh in some other locale when you can start playing again? Because I look at it and I go, if they would have played a couple of games and then had it canceled, the outrage would have been that much worse.
Because they actually tried and somebody probably would have gotten sick.
Well, even if they don't get sick, I mean, we're talking about the province of Nova Scotia getting sick. And since you're running this tournament off the backs of volunteers.
Those volunteers,
you're taking a risk.
Yeah, like that's the one thing. It's like, I know people that live in Nova Scotia and they could not care less that this tournament got canceled. They said it sucks. You know, it would have been nice to be able to have it and have something for this community. We went to a national championship in PEI. Like,
right.
People in the Maritimes love having people around for tournaments.
Well, they love their hockey as well. Like, they're to put it bluntly, they're savage about their teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like people that I know, they're like, I don't care. Like, I care more about my community being safe from COVID than having this tournament here. If you're gonna get mad, put the IIHF's feet to the fire on this.
And that rightfully so. Like, that's where you should be angry, because if the IIHF had learned anything in Edmonton when they had the outbreak with Team Germany there, is that they would have had a backup place available, not available, I guess, but at least a backup plan underway to move this tournament somewhere else where it may be able to be played. And it sounds like the IIHF didn't even bother worrying about that, because they had been told by Nova Scotia, you know, authorities,
don't bother,
it'll be okay, don't worry, it'll be okay, before this outbreak happened. And the thing that kills me is that there was a news report today out of Ottawa from the Canadian Press that basically said between February 22nd and April 11th, returning travelers into Canada, so these are people that are coming from outside Canada, returning travelers tested positive 2018 times when they arrived in the country. It's about 1% of the arrivals. Granted, it's not a lot, but that's 2,000 cases that were introduced into Canada.
And if you think about, so I did an episode of my show, Let's Talk About, a few weeks ago,
right,
on what an R value is in terms of in infectious diseases. COVID has an R value of roughly, you know, the average change, like the R value changes as time goes on because infectiousness rises and falls depending on conditions.
Right. Yeah.
But the R value for COVID is around between 2.4 and in extreme cases, 2.9 to 3. So that means in the most conservative case, like a 2, each case multiplies twice. So each infection leads to 2 more people being infected. So each subsequent generation or different wave going one after the other, on average, that infects 2 to 3 people. So that 2,000 very quickly becomes 4,000, which becomes 8,000, which becomes 16,000. And that's a month.
Exponential at that point, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exponential growth.
That's, I mean, again, this is the stuff that, it's not explained very well, obviously, in the public eye, but mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I just don't understand why people are angry at Nova Scotia for trying to protect. The premier of Nova Scotia has a due diligence and a duty to protect his constituents, not the tournament for the IIHF.
Yeah.
And so getting angry at Nova Scotia before the tournament started, I think, is ridiculous. Had they started the tournament and then they called it off because they basically locked everything down, that would have been worse. And so I look at this and I go, really pick your battles here, because if you're going to be outraged at anything, be outraged that there's nothing in place for a backup. That's mm-hmm. where your outrage should sit right now. The other thing you can be outraged at, Jason, because we were talking about the QMJHL, again, Halifax and Cape Breton are done because of Nova Scotia's rules. Mm-hmm. They're not participating. The 3 New Brunswick teams, that's Moncton, St. John, and Acadia Bathurst, are playing right now in mm-hmm. in a 3-team, 9-game round robin. The winner will then go on to play Charlottetown in order to find out who goes from the Maritime Division into the 4-team final sort of bubble that they're going to build in with 3 Quebec teams and 1 Maritime team. So right now, Charlottetown's not even playing. They're just sitting on the sideline watching everybody play. I joked about it with Jenna last week. Here's where things get a little crazy. So we're talking about rising cases. We're talking about insanity. We're talking about, you know, things not going as they should. Here's where things are ridiculous. On the 20th, Moncton played St. John in St. John. There were 1,423 people at the game. Okay. 2 nights later, Acadia Bathurst came in. There were 1,029 people at the game. Okay. The next night, Moncton and Acadia Bathurst met in Acadia Bathurst, or in wherever they're playing Bathurst. 1,108 people. And then as of the 24th, St. John and Moncton played in Moncton, 2,277 people in the arena. So now we're getting into lockdown territory because this is this week now. St. John had 1,482 people at a game on the 25th, and they will play their next games sometime on Wednesday night. But we're talking about New Brunswick, which again has locked down, not hard, but has locked down and told people no travel from outside the province to come into New Brunswick, is still allowing fans at the game.
I understand that people want their lives back and they want, you know, their regular. I know people want that, but it's incredibly selfish. As somebody who knows people who have been infected by COVID, young people who have been infected and didn't have a nice time, like very healthy young people, mind you, I don't care that you're sick and tired of being locked down in your home. I don't care. I have no sympathy for that right now.
No, I agree.
The mental health crisis that we're seeing right now is extremely bad. But letting people get infected with COVID-19 and die, or pass it to people who are not able to fight it off and die, is not the solution. You know, we scrape and we claw for some reason, as a society and as a species, for the simplest and easiest solution to a problem, when the easiest and simplest solution is almost always the worst.
So, as of today, there were 1,890 cases in New Brunswick. 8 new cases, half of them were in Fredericton today, which, okay, that's no big deal. There's a lockdown at UNB Fredericton extended until next week now. Mm-hmm. Isolation for middle school has been extended. There's been a possible exposure in high schools there. There's a possible exposure elsewhere in the province. And I go, you don't seem to be taking this very seriously about these exposures. Like Bathurst is up in its own sort of in zone, what's called zone 6. And they have 5 active cases right now, which is fine. Like no big deal in terms of 5 active cases. But you go, what are you doing? Like, why are you even taking that risk? Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. All of them are in orange phase. They're orange or yellow phase, except for zone 4, which is in a red phase, but nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to, I don't know. I just, it angers me that like St. Thomas University and New Brunswick Community College are both locked down because of their proximity to UNB as well. And I just mm-hmm. go, this is ridiculous. Like, why are we doing this when normal people who are following the rules, masked and all that, can't live a normal life? And yet hockey fans can go to hockey games.
Because it's an institution of the Canadian way.
I'll allow you to say that, but I'm not
going to
agree
with going that. To hockey games is line 1 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Do you want to know where else those rights and freedoms have been used this week?
Do you want to know what the first actual first line of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is for the people listening?
I was going to say, you can give it to us because, I mean, that's...
It's basically that the government can restrict or remove or impede on your rights as written in the Charter in exceptional circumstances, like a global pandemic.
That seems appropriate, yes, yeah.
Just food for thought.
So one place that they didn't really care about COVID exposure was in Russia, where the KHL finished off their playoffs. The Gagarin Cup was handed out as Avangard Omsk won the Gagarin Cup 4-2 over CSKA Moscow in the final. Congratulations to them, although they played in front of packed houses in every game that they played. So I don't really know if it's a congratulations as much as it is congratulations for not killing all of your fans. But
COVID doesn't exist if we ignore it, right?
Right. No, it doesn't exist within arenas, that's for sure. I know that for certain. So
yeah, they got the Sputnik vaccine or whatever.
I'm not getting that, Putin. In terms of Omsk, though, kind of an interesting team. They're coached by Bob Hartley. The team featured Ilya Kovalchuk, which is where he went to after leaving North America. Yuri Sekash, a former Anaheim Duck. Reed Boucher, who played for a pile of different teams in the NHL. And Nail Yakupov, you might remember him from the Edmonton Oilers. Nail Yakupov is over there. He didn't play in the playoffs. He was injured. But that team took it to CSKA Moscow. Avangard last won a Russian league back in 2004 when it was still the Russian Super League. So it's been a while since they got to hoist the title. But you may recall, and maybe you don't recall, but you may, if you're a follower of the KHL, you may recall that Avangard had arena problems in this season, in that they couldn't play at home because the floor of their arena was cracked. So they couldn't put ice down. As a result, they had to move west to Moscow. Now, for those that might be unfamiliar with with Russian geography, Omsk sits a total of 2,681 kilometers to the east of Moscow. Like, it takes 3 hours to fly from Moscow to Omsk.
Yeah.
So they didn't even get to play in front of their home fans. They basically played in front of Moscow fans because they were playing in Arena Vita, which is in, I guess, a section that Vitiaz usually plays in.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't even, like, they haven't played in front of their fans all season long. They've been playing. And I go, is this not the weirdest championship ever, in that you basically have a team with no home winning a championship on, you know, as far away from as possible from their home city and their home rink? But
I mean, it's very KHL.
Hey, I mean, we know that Vladivostok is coming back next year, and they're, you know, they're 6 days away from Moscow. So
closer to Canada than they are Moscow.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting to see how the KHL is laid out and how everybody sort of, you know, can do what they're doing over there. Although Arena Omsk is not going to be back in session probably for at least another year.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, are they going to even have a celebration at home anytime? Or are they going to start the season next year back in Moscow and hopefully figure things out once they get there? But it kind of sucks not having your home fans, the people who come out to see you, the people who come out to support you every day, unable to cheer for you.
And I mean, like, this is a team that, if for people that don't follow the KHL, this is a team that's like swung for the fences the last few years with the players that they've brought in.
Well, Omsk, like, is where Jager used to play too.
Yeah, so. And like, they had a couple years ago, they had a lineup with Christopher Stieg, Victor Stahlberg, Ilya Mikheyev, who's right now with the Toronto Maple Leafs, David Desharnais. They had Cody Franzen for a couple years. Ville Poka is still there. They had Kari Ramo in net a couple years ago. Like, this is a team that has tried and tried for a number of years, and they finally put it together and won that championship.
And I mean, credit to Bob Hartley. I mean, we've seen Mike Keenan win as a North American, you know, taught and trained coach, go over there and win with when he won with Magnitogorsk. But hey, credit to Bob Hartley, who now has basically a championship in almost every league there ever has been. He won, you know, a Calder Cup. He won an NHL Stanley Cup with the Avalanche. He's won a Gagarin Cup. He's basically won at every level he's been at. I know there are people that don't like his coaching style and players that have complained about him publicly, but dude gets results. I'm not saying that's in any way justification for how he treats players, but I'm just saying that, I mean, he seems to get players to do what he needs in order to win championships. So,
yeah. And I mean, another trophy for Ilya Kovalchuk's mantle.
Does he have many? Because I don't recall him having many. No,
not many.
This might be the last kick of the can for Kovalchuk. Maybe he'll retire now.
Yeah. Well, he's got a few Gagarin Cups, I think, at this point.
One or two, I believe. So, but yeah, I mean, hard to say what's going to happen now with Kovalchuk. He's what, 38, 39, I believe. So we'll see what happens, I guess, there. But I mean, obviously there'll be player movement over in the KHL. There always is. So speaking about coaches, Brandon Cote joins Mike Babcock behind the bench at the University of Saskatchewan. Brandon Cote looks like he's going to be the heir apparent whenever Mike Babcock's tenure there ends. So Cote, who used to play for Babcock in Spokane, is a former player coming back to join his coach. To be honest, I mean, I don't know a lot about Brandon Cote, but from everything I've read, dude gets results as well. He good motivator, works well with players, really, really good with young players, which I think is important because obviously, you know, university, the revolving door is always there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, good on Brandon Cote for getting this opportunity, because I think that's fantastic. He was with Swift Current as assistant coach. He used to coach Red Deer. So, but yeah, good for him that he'll be joining there. I know, I mean, as you've been covering men's hockey at the university for a while. I mean, again, are you excited to see a guy like Mike Babcock step in and step behind the bench there?
The more I've thought about it, the more I have mixed feelings about it. I think it's a great boost from like an eyeballs level for university sports in this country to have someone like a name like Mike Babcock there, but it also brings with it a lot of ill will and a lot of bad publicity because, you know, he still hasn't apologized for really anything that he's done. And he's, you know, listening to the interviews that he's done, it's textbook deflection and like minimization and straw man arguments. Like it runs the whole gamut. But I think it's still a good opportunity for Brandon Cote to come in, be an understudy to an NHL caliber coach, and then kind of take the team in his direction.
With a heck of a program there too in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a great program. But I look at it and I go, I think that I agree with you. I think it's a double-edged sword. Obviously, the negativity that comes with Babcock and some of the stuff he's done, you know, certainly is fresh in the minds of a lot of people. But I also look at it as a double-edged sword in that, if Mike Babcock doesn't want the attention, Mike Babcock won't ask for it either. Like if I was Saskatchewan, and again, I'm not Saskatchewan and I'm never going to be Saskatchewan, but if I was Saskatchewan, I would be like, yo, like we're going to trumpet how good Canada West men's hockey is. And you're going to be the guy to do it. You're the biggest name in Canada West hockey right now. So let's get the loudspeaker, let's get the megaphone out, and let's start trumpeting how good it is.
Yeah,
but I haven't heard hide nor hair of Mike Babcock talking about the University of Saskatchewan yet. And I go, why? What's taking so long? Like, you're coming there to work. So let's start talking about how great the program is and how great the teams are in Canada West and how you're going to have to put together this incredible roster to compete with some of the teams that you're going to be coaching. Like, let's get out there and start really pushing the programs and certainly the level of play. And yet we don't hear a single peep from Mike Babcock at all. So, I mean, that's where I stand. I look at it and I go, we're missing a big opportunity here to really market 100%. This league.
100%. And I think the optimist in me says that'll kick up when we have confirmation about eSport coming back.
But even if you don't, though, you're still going to have to recruit. You're still going to have to, like, this mm-hmm. is the thing. And I know that a lot of that recruiting was already done for him. But get to know the players, get to know what, give these players a bit of a boost. Especially mm-hmm. some of the graduating players as well, who may not be coming back. A lot of these guys, again, we're talking about guys like Sachenko and stuff who go off to the AHL and the ECHL. Give those guys a boost. Get them, help them find jobs somewhere in pro hockey if that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of that might come down to them wanting to put as much distance as possible from the negative story. Because like every time Mike Babcock comes up, Twitter like lights itself on fire for a day and a half still from, you know, everything that went on before. And, you know, everyone's talking, like they're talking about it on 31 Thoughts and the Steve Dangle podcast, and it's all over the place. And I think they're partially wanting to, and this is pure speculation, just put enough distance as they can between those stories and Mike actually taking to the ice with the Saskatchewan Huskies. And I think, you know, the hiring of Brandon Côté really is going to be a good shield for a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be more of a focus on like, oh, here's the future coach of this team. Like, here's the guy that's going to be taking over after this year.
Right.
So he'll probably be the one in front of the media. He'll be the one that's getting the interviews. He's going to be the one that we're talking to before games.
Well, but again, the rumor is, and apparently the information is that Mike Babcock will be with the team all season long and will travel with the team. So it's not just like an advisory role. He will be mm-hmm. coaching at some point. How much? I don't know. I
expect him to be on the bench.
Well, that's what I mean, though. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, I'm not shocked that they brought him in. I mean, that's what they brought him in to do. But I look at that and I go, if you're trying to recraft your image, the best way you can do that is talk about the players. The best way you can do that is to shift the negativity from yourself. And I get there's always going to be negativity because of what's gone on. But the best way to shift it off yourself and shift that spotlight off yourself is to start talking about the program and the players.
And I think what it does is hiring Brandon Côté gives Saskatchewan an out for if things go horribly.
Well, yeah.
It's going to be really easy for them to say, okay, Mike Babcock exit stage left, and they can just dust their hands of it and it's done, because there's not going to be a question of, okay, who's going to be coaching this team now? He's right there. It's just kind of, it goes bad. We can just push this mess out the door. And
especially being in a volunteer role, like there's no contracts and there's nothing. You don't have to worry about paying somebody to leave. Like it's just a simple clean break and you're done.
Mm-hmm. So, exactly.
Looking at other coaches, Gerard Gallant reportedly will be named the head coach for the Canadian Men's World Championship team playing in Riga, Latvia, coming up. I think that's a good pick. I don't have no problem with Gerard Gallant. The bigger story might be is that Gallant is open to all offers from the NHL right now.
I mean, it's going to be a great, great showcase before he takes to the bench for the Winnipeg Jets next year, right?
Yes. I am on that train. I'm not going to lie. I would call it like that wagon, but mm-hmm. like I want some real force behind this. I am on that train. Let's bring in for all that Paul Maurice has done, good, bad, and indifferent. Gerard Gallant's record is that much better.
I had a conversation with my friends about it because the game against Edmonton happened, and then our group chat lights up with, you know, all of us just being dejected and angry about this game. And my first thought was, hey, Gerard Gallant is still out there.
Right.
He might be, for the way this team is constructed, the speed that that forward group has, the physicality that it can bring, his style, that wave attacking, that swarming play, a system that we saw with the Vegas Golden Knights and what made them so successful, it's perfect to just plunk in with the Jets. Like, imagine having that wave washing over you consistently and just being hounded. You know, like, take the reins off Nick Ehlers, take the reins off Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, and just let them hound people.
But I mean, I look at, if you want the example of where you should be basing this on, go back to 2018 and watch the playoff series between Jets and Vegas, because that was exactly what you're going to get out of Gerard Gallant every night as a head coach, in that he's going to push these players to get out of their little bubbles that they're in, these tight little windows of where they play on the ice, and these tight little sort of feel good, I'll just go through the motions, or I'll just, you know, I'll swing a stick at this guy and maybe, you know, maybe get the puck. And if I don't, well, I'll skate beside him, and, you know, I'll make sure he doesn't get away from me. But no, that is not how Gerard Gallant plays or coaches this game. And I go, if we want to take it to the next level, we need to find a coach who can take it to the next level. And I'm not saying, again, good, bad, or indifferent about Maurice. Gerard Gallant is on a different level. And that's what this team needs right now, is a new level.
And I think, you know, every coach has a shelf life. Like, that's one of the idioms that is universal in hockey.
The hired to be fired idiom, yeah?
Yeah. And I think you can see it that, you know, when Mark Scheifele is publicly disagreeing with you, it's time to, you know, maybe make a change. It to me feels like, not that he's worn out his welcome, but his voice isn't resonating in the room like it used to. Whatever happened with Patrick Laine, and he was unhappy with his deployment and everything else, pushed him out of a city that he loved to be in, and a situation he loved to be in, playing with his best friend, Nick Ehlers. And you had that whole situation. You've had the whole, like, descent of Josh Morrissey over the past few years.
Yeah.
You've got Mark Scheifele unhappy. You've got Blake Wheeler unhappy. You know, you've got this annual Vezina caliber goaltender and Connor Hellebuyck there. You need to do everything to pull all those disparate pieces back together and forge what this team is supposed to be. You know, get Ville Heinola in the lineup. If you really want to, just fire Sammy Niku into the sun for a second round pick. Staple Dylan DeMello to Josh Morrissey for the rest of his career. Like, do what you need to do to bring this team back together. And if that's get rid of Paul Maurice, then that's what you've got to do.
Like you said, maybe there's a different voice that's needed, because some of these guys, and I'm not saying it's a country club, but some of these guys look very comfortable in the way they play this game right now. So that might be the best sort of thing that you can do to wake everybody up. But a couple of smaller news notes here. Florence Schelling was relieved of her GM duties with Bern in the Swiss League. Was a big story when she was hired there. Apparently Bern felt that they weren't competitive enough this year, and they have 13 upcoming contracts to renegotiate. The reason that was given is that she has not enough experience as a GM to be able to get this team back to where it needs to be.
Doesn't have enough experience to do the job that you hired her to do.
It's the old, the old catch 22. We're looking for somebody with experience, but all we're getting are young people that are applying.
Weird how that happens. Weird how.
News out of Canada West, which I think, I mean, Florence Schelling will land somewhere. She's fantastic. So she'll be back, but it just sucks that had to happen. But news out of Canada West, Morgan Baker and Caitlin Crowe, Morgan Baker, goaltender, and Caitlin Crowe, defender with the Regina Cougars, basically came out this week and said they will not be returning for their fifth year at Regina. Both have signed on to pursue post-grad degrees outside of Saskatchewan. So Regina losing two veterans they probably were going to come to rely on this season, with the loss of Baker and Crow. I know for myself, I mean, having watched Baker and Crow play, they're phenomenal players. Like, they can certainly play the game. So going to require somebody to step up in Regina now and fill those holes, because those are two gaping holes in the roster right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you lose a season. Like, Well, and life doesn't stop for the hockey season.
And it's interesting because they're the first two to come out and confirm that they're not coming back. Like, there are others that I know of that, you know, that are contemplating it, but they're the first two to come out and go, well, that's all for me, folks. Mm-hmm. And I go, that sucks for them because they don't get the fifth year. They don't get to be a senior. They don't get that senior game. They don't get to, you know, all the honors that come with it. Like, it sucks. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll hear from Baker and Crow wherever they land in the future, but obviously it won't be at Regina. I'm struggling with this story, and I mean, we only got a couple minutes here, so I'm going to get this out as quickly as we can. NWHL announced today that they're going to double the salary cap to $300,000 per team. So if you're doing the math at home, they were at $150,000 last year. That's about $8,000 to $10,000 a player, depending on how people are being played. Salaries range from anywhere from $7,000 to, I believe it was $16,000 or $17,000. The new math will tell you that that's about $17,500 per player. According to reports, salaries range between $10,000 and $35,000 per year. This is despite the fact that the NWHL still has not turned a profit. And I don't understand how you can double the salary cap for six teams, and it'll be a seventh team in season eight, because they're planning on expanding to Montreal the following season. So I don't understand how you can have seven teams being paid double the amount they were this year and not turning a profit.
I mean, maybe they are trying to put themselves in a position where, you know, make themselves as inviting as possible structure-wise for the NHL to come in and say, hey, we're going to take this over. It's got a healthy salary cap, adding a team in Montreal, like make
it. But is it a healthy salary cap though? If you're making $17,500 a year playing hockey, you're not even scraping the poverty line.
I mean, healthy as in like it's going up.
But again, you're not
objectively.
But you're not healthy though, because all you're doing is you're taking sponsor money and putting it back into the players. You're not even making money yet. So yeah. I look at this and I go, like, Discover pumped in a high six-figure sponsorship this past season for 18 games. And again, I'm not gonna fault the 18 games. I mean, whatever they did, whatever they had to. But you look at that and you go, if that's a large chunk of that money, what exactly are you doing other than just absorbing sponsorship dollars and turning it over to the players? And not, like, at some point you have to generate profits in order to make this sustainable.
I think that's for the NWHL, that's year 8, year 9, year 10 problem.
Well, I guess. I mean, because right now it looks like it's not going to be a year 7 problem.
Yep.
Anyway, good for them for raising the salary cap. I still think that asking players to play for less money than, and again, this is just a general women's hockey thing. Asking players for less, playing less than, you know, a proper paid salary is just ridiculous. But I mean, who cares if it's 2021, right? I mean, yeah. Forget equality now. So anyway. Other than that, I think we're just about out of stories. I mean, again, I'll throw this out only because, again, we got about a minute left here, Jay. Obviously, no fans in the stands, nobody in the press box that can come and help you if things are done. Artem Anisimov got a chance to suit up in the pads this week with all the injuries to the Ottawa Senators goaltenders, which I thought was kind of awesome. And former Manitoba Moose, former Edmonton Oiler, former Atlanta Thrasher, Freddie Brathwaite, at 48 years of age, had to jump in and help Henderson Silver Knights in the AHL, as they lost a goaltender as well, Logan Thompson, former Brock University goaltender. Are you a fan of the e-bug situations? Do you like the e-bugs?
I like the e-bug. I think it's good. Like, the one good thing about this year is that teams are carrying three goaltenders usually, which, you know, it's a little bit more versatility. Guys get more rest. Guys right, get to yeah. make an NHL salary and all that. And I just love when these little stories come up. I love seeing a player like Artem Anisimov being, you know, straight as a board, trying to practice in goalie equipment that he's probably never worn in his life. And then it's just great to see Freddie Brathwaite out there in his Atlanta Thrashers mask, making Atlanta hockey Twitter go insane.
I just love the fact that it's like, legitimately, you know, and I don't mean to put this on, you know, the common man. I mean, that's what it was before that, you know, when guys like, you know, Gavin McHale and stuff like that were stepping in, and Byron Spriggs were stepping in. And I mean, these guys have a little bit of goaltending experience, but I love the fact that it's such chaos every time there's an e-bug situation. So that's my like anyway about it. Like, I mean, honestly, if there was more players that like had to strap on the pads just because they had to, I would love to see that. So, I mean, I don't ever want to see anybody get hurt or anybody go into the net if they're not ready to play the net, obviously. But to see Anisimov, you know, warming up in the down the hall, down the tunnel there and trying to figure out how to get dressed and all that, I thought that was awesome. So
yeah, it was great.
Before we go, Jay, anything you want to pump, anything you want to promote your show if you want? We got about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, if you want to join me, let's talk about every Tuesday here on 101.5 UMFM, 11 to 11:30. I talk about pretty much whatever I want, things that are big in the news, things that are big on the internet, things that people get wrong a lot of the time, and I try and set the record straight. So if you're interested in that, give it a listen.
There you go, folks. So make sure you tune into that coming up this week. Obviously, tune into the hockey show again next week as we get everything back in order that way. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on the station. You've been listening to the hockey show here on 101.5 UMFM. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.
Here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg. Hey UMFM listeners, did you enjoy that previous show? If so, UMFM is seeking new volunteer contributors who want to produce engaging spoken word content. Why not start a radio show on UMFM to tell your story and learn some great new skills while doing so? We offer remote training to help you get set up to record from the comfort of your own space. Get in touch with us at info@umfm.com to sign up for volunteer training today. The next round of training sessions are starting soon, so don't delay. We can't wait to hear your voice on 101.5 UMFM. Have you ever gone for a job interview and been told you need more experience? How do you get experience if you need experience? Does that frustrate you? Career Services wants you to know about Level Up, a new innovative work-integrated learning program designed to provide students with real work experience. Work on short-term virtual projects for real organizations and get paid to do it. You do 80 hours of work, you get experience, you make contacts, and you get paid $1,400. Do one project or as many as you and your time can handle. It's all your choice. For more information on registering or to sign up for an information session, go to Level Up on the front page of the umanitoba.ca/careerservices site.